time for a number of questions, either to individual speakers or to the panel as a whole.
Question for a factor. In examples of autonomy within the system of authority, you focus on example of a kind of kavana, how you bring meaning to, let's say, the way that you that you daven or take kula. And then you mentioned the second example of adding tefillos within the Amida. Can you suggest other possible examples of bringing autonomy in? Specifically, what you could suggest, what these teachers could suggest for our students in either elementary school or high school, students who've never heard any examples of autonomy.
I will take one or two questions together.
Just to open the question, that I couldn't agree more with everything that Gosh said, except I wonder if by framing the topic in terms of Bella's Shilaism and Cohen and Eisen's sovereign self, we lose sight of another side of the whole picture, which, you know, nobody more than Eisen has talked about, which is the side of community. And that, in fact, the conversation ended up moving in the direction of interpersonal relations between teachers and students, between teachers and teachers, between students and the text. But, in fact, the Orthodox community wields a fair amount of social authority that isn't really defined by ability to punish, but we envelop individuals within this web of social relations that they feel very attached to and are very difficult to give up on, and how that can be, how we can find authority and autonomy there, how that authority can be used in a powerful way and also potentially misused. And how that fits in with the attempt to find warmth and personal meaning within the framework that's given.
I heard a discussion about authority and individualism, but I'm not sure that I heard about authority and autonomy. Given the framing of Bella and Cohen and Eisen, of an era in which there's a fundamental dissonance between what students exist in, what students experience in the rest of their lives, and what students experience Jewishly. The rest of their lives they experience true autonomy to some extent, and what I'm hearing here is that where there's room for individualism within that system, but it doesn't seem to allow for any sense of autonomy within that system. The dissonance between what they experience in our lives outside of the Jewish world and the lives inside of the Jewish world seems to me to be one of the key issues, and I'd like to hear something about that.
There is a dichotomy today in Jewish education. More Torah is being studied today in more places than at any time in Jewish history. At the same time, I'm sure that everyone in the audience is aware that we have more people who are falling by the wayside from the Jewish path that they study. Most of those in the audience who are of the age that they are closer to retirement or at retirement generally have the same type of Jewish life and beliefs that they had in their childhood. But today, the Chozrim B'Sheila, both in America and in Israel, are families, religious families, children, who go to religious day schools and who leave the path is just tremendous. It approaches huge proportions. And the basic comment that is being made is that what they're being taught in schools, generally, in Jewish religious schools, is the what and the how, but they're not being taught the why. And that seems to be the main criteria that is missing in Jewish education. And I think that Rabbi Goldsmith hit the point very well with a role model. But this is one of the greatest problems we face today in Jewish education here in Israel, in the religious schools, religious families, with our teenagers, and it's being faced in America. And what was said tonight was wonderful by all the speakers, but it didn't touch on this urgent situation, which is certainly part of the educational challenge in a world of personal choice.
Let Why don't we let the speakers take a crack at this first round of comments? You're welcome to respond to any or all.
Especially questioners who have devoted so many years of their incredibly productive lives to the Jewish people and Jewish education. I think we're fortunate as Jewish people that we have you who are engaged in this kind of work. Suggest other examples of autonomy in addition to the ones that I gave. I think the point that I was trying to make was that religion, in essence, opens up the possibility for a multiplicity of personal feelings. And Dafka, not to, I think, necessarily suggest avenues for students other than empowering them to think creatively themselves about what it is that's meaningful to them. I think, and what I was trying to suggest was that if students could be made to understand and appreciate the not just the legitimacy, but the necessity of bringing themselves into this conversation of Torah and mitzvahs in the way in which I try to describe it, whether it's the Yonasi B'chadrei HaSela, whether it's the rub scent and warmth, or whether it's Dr. Tversky's religion in essence, then they're off and running. And I think at that point, the less the teacher suggests, I think the greater the goal would be for the student themselves to try to come up with something. So I don't know of any more specific examples. I threw out the color for the Dalet meaning, and then mercifully, I think my respondents decided not to pick that up. But that might be a suggestion, it might not be a suggestion. Place of community, that's a very, very, very important question, as is the question of the relationship between individualism and autonomy. So I think we need to think a lot more, and I haven't thought it through, so I'm not now in a position to meaningfully address your question. But I think the place and the role of community in everything that we're talking about, that an individual doesn't exist, especially within the Jewish world as an island. An individual doesn't exist as an individual. We're part of a tzibur, we're part of a community. Our community is so central to us. And what role does the inclusion within the community play in this continuum that my colleague spoke about, in the continuum between one end and the other? I think it's very nuanced and very important, and I really need to think a lot more about it, and I appreciate that you raised it. I'd love to talk to you afterwards to hear from you what it is that you had in mind. I think you're right. I think that I wasn't talking about autonomy in the classic sense of the term. I think the reality of the culture is a culture of autonomy, but the reality of Judaism is a culture of authority. So I was trying to chip away at the dichotomy of the two, or the extremes of the two, by trying to speak about what you correctly point out should more be defined as individualism than autonomy. I don't think it's an example of classic autonomy. I think it's an example of not imperative autonomy, but influential autonomy. It's a softer kind of autonomy. And I would love to hear what you have to say about how to struggle with this issue. The issue, I think, is a real issue, and I think it's an issue in Israel also. So how do you deal with it? How do you help kids appreciate it? And I think the more we can empower them to bring themselves into the equation, call it autonomy, call it individualism, call it personal choice, and I think there's room for choice. I can choose based on who I am, what religion does and speaks to me. I think that's really, really helpful. But I can learn a lot more from you than I can offer any more at this point. I think we did address the issue. I think all of us tried to address the issue of Chozer B'Sheilah, because I think we're trying to speak to the fact that it's not just the why, but it's the what for. I mean, the whole point of religion in essence, and the whole point of the Varenkeit and the warmth of mitzvahs, is not just to teach the what. If we teach the what, and we only teach the religion and manifestation, then that will resonate with some people, it won't resonate with others. I think we have a greater chance of holding on to a greater cross-section of young men and women growing up today in our community, and to have them continue a fealty to those values that for us are most important, if we combine the religion in manifestation with the religion in essence. And the religion in essence is not just why do we do it. If you ask me why do we do it, because Allah Hashem can be Allah. For me, the reason why I do observe Torah mitzvahs is because Hashem said, told me. Because I really believe that that's what's an abore, and I'm a servant. And I do it, God only asks, you know, why? What do you mean why? Hashem said to do it. That works for me. But the question is, what does it do for me? You know, why should the why be an important question, and how does it address? I think that we're all trying to chip away at that in our own different ways by highlighting the importance of not only teaching the text as a text, but a relationship with the text, a connection with the text, a continuum, a creating a context that's so compelling, creating an image that's so compelling that it's as if we feel swept up and virtually coerced, even though we're really not. That's all part of what I think needs to be done. And thank God, Baruch Hashem, we're blessed with master educators who do this in order to hold on to as many people as we can.
We didn't use the term chuzrim b'sheva, but I think we all had it in mind. What I see, I don't see families so much leaving the fold as young people. I think between the ages of about 15 to 25, I read, there have been articles in the papers, it's a bit more amongst men, boys, and than girls. And here, the point that I made about discussions, that a lot of talking, whether it's parents, whether it's teachers, whether it's a neighbor. I live in the Old City. We had, you know, the groups in the Old City. There are other places. We especially took someone, a youth director, to work with the young people, to even if they were, you know, kind of experiencing their autonomy and making their own decisions about religion, still they're connected. We do activities. We see them as part of the community, and a lot of work has to be put into it. In a personal way, and the love is free love. I mean, there are no magical answers. There are no magical answers. The issue is an issue, and I think of also finding more meaning, finding ways that the student will connect to a Misorah. Sometimes it's through music. Sometimes it's through other ways. But you know, it's not foolproof. It's not 100%. Work as much as we can with each individual. Every person is a, you know, olam malei biyahadut, and we put in as much as we can, and in the ways that we know how to do it in education and in personal discussion and guidance with these young men and women who somehow don't find the answers, are looking for something a little bit different. Your answer of anashamini atafa is not going to. Not going to make it for them. The law silly is there. But we have to look for other ways that will bring the young people in and will give them the excitement. And sometimes it's also, I mentioned this element of kiddusha. Sometimes it's dafka showing them, you know, like where you go to India, you go to all these places, you're looking for something different. Let's see if there's some kind of a deeper or something more. More involved, more of a way that we have in Yehadut as well. This Hasidut, you know, there's you know, there's different strokes for different blokes, whatever it is. There's, you know, there's different ways, and we don't want to lose any individual from Yehadut because it's something so important to us. And we make these feelings. We don't have to be ashamed. We make these feelings known. Of course, bottom line, the decision is yours. The decision is whoever it is. We're talking, we treat this 15, 17, 18-year-old boy, girl, man, 21, 22, with a lot of respect and dignity. But we can still say everything we believe fully and truly, and work with the individual and try to see that, you know, to keep the person connected as much as possible to Yehudit.
Thank you.
But the thank you for the question. It was a very important question.
I just respond to one very quick point. The last point of the, we were taught the what and the how, but not the why. I don't know if this is going to come as a surprise. I think it won't, but it might sound a little radical. And that is, most often, when a 12-year-old or a 14-year-old chooses not to daven that morning, it's most often not because they don't believe in Hashgach HaPratit and don't believe in, you know, and I don't understand it. It's, I don't know. And, you know, it's easier to sleep, it's easier to manage. And I think that there is, you know, we talk about a continuum. I think there's certain a kind of a wave here. And when you start with the younger grades, first, second, third, fourth, of course there is some of the why, but the what and the hows really take central stage. I think that at some point, and the reason why I'm sounding vague is because nothing's black and white. You don't know who the child is and what age, and some in eighth grade, and some in their year in Israel. After, if we're talking about an environment, or maybe later, maybe when they're 35 or 55, do they start really caring more about the why and less about the what and how? And that's all the way up at the a lot of the whys. And then at some point, we come to what Rabbi Shaker talked about, which is the bottom line is we keep kosher because you have to, period. And the Rambam says that very clearly, very often, especially, you know, for example, with Hilchot Shofar. Bottom line, I have the Rebbe's Yesh Padavar that I understand, I have a reason behind it, but bottom line, Hashem commanded me, period. And so we start from the what and the how, and eventually we end up at the what and the how. But it's that middle ground, that gray, very difficult gray ground of the why, which I think is very important. It's the timing, which I think makes it so difficult.
As is our practice, I'm happy to call upon our friend and teacher, Rabbi Chaim Bravender, the president of Atid, to offer a few concluding remarks as he's making his way to the stage. I'll again thank our speakers, our partners at Yeshiva University in Israel, and for all of you for attending. After Rabbi Bravender's remarks, they'll be married upstairs through the glass doors to the left of the tables where Michael Pomerantz has set up his display of Svarim, including all the titles in the Atid Press catalog. Rabbi Bravender.
I have to excuse myself. I don't think I've ever come late for an Atid event.
Yeah.
The reason is only people in Israel will understand was that I was at a chuppah. And this chuppah had the dubious honor, turned out, of being the Masada Kedusha. Now in the ksuba that they use in Yerushalayim, it often contains a precise amount of money. You know, in America, they've overcome this problem somehow, and they just give stock portfolios or something. But in Israel, they still put in the amount, and Chassan said, well, this is the amount, and I foolishly wrote it down. When the father of the column saw that the amount had been changed from dollars to shkalim, from a higher number to a lower number, he declared that the entire evening was invalid. So now I have found, you know, I've never taken any courses in bridging the gap. And, you know, my literature approach, which is usually, well, it doesn't make any difference anyway, certainly didn't work. So until we straighten it out, it took us a little time, so I'm sorry I got here. But I said about Israel, you know, America, they, as I say, they've solved a lot of these problems, but Israel, they haven't. I wanted to thank, personally, Rabbi Schachter, for coming, representing Yeshiva University, and honoring us at Atid with his presence. I missed the talk, but I'm sorry that I missed the talk, which is a rare occurrence. I missed a lot of talks. Malka, I heard the last part of what you said. It's certainly true that new kinds of educational experiences, like mothers and daughters, are a change, maybe even a radical change, in what was done up to now. And we all commend you for the work that you've done in this and other areas. Rabbi Goldschmidt, I don't know, I don't think I know you well, but I wish you well. You're going to be a great success here in Israel. And Mechayel lechayel. I would like to say one thing. When you talk about education, you know, you're always wrong. Because, as you may have noticed, every child is different from every other child. And every learning experience affects the same children in different ways. So whenever you say anything about anything that has anything to do with education, the first thing that you know is that it's wrong. Nevertheless, I would like to give you an idea which might be helpful, which is connected, at least loosely, to what was spoken about this evening. Yadut is an extremely autonomous enterprise. It's so autonomous that Adam HaRishon was kicked out of Gan Eden because of this gift of autonomy that he was given. And the gift of autonomy, some people call it Seicha, this intelligence that we have to think and to analyze. And in the final analysis, it has to make sense to us. And when Adam HaRishon said that the mitzvah that he had received doesn't make any sense, there was just no way to deal with the situation that he had created. So that the newly constituted Jews who lived outside of Gan Eden had to learn that they had the autonomy and they could fly wherever they wished and their minds could take them wherever it would. But at some point, we're limited by the will of God. If a teacher can teach those two things to his students, if he can teach him that he can think anywhere he wishes, he can fly with his intelligence to any of the worlds that are available, and also at the same time, that we have obligations and that we have limits, and that those obligations and limits are thousands of years old and run the test of the crucible of the greatest intelligences of those 2,000 years, then I think the teacher has done a wonderful job. Have a good evening.